Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand Teton River City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of May 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will join us to take up conditions on the ground as it relates to the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast, too, that with the guys up at Earthrest Technologies in Chicago, Illinois. I'll update you on the Ag News for the day, tell you a bit more about how to control herbicide-resistant weeds in your fields, and a good reason to check your cornfields for the black cutworm, especially before the Memorial Day weekend. That's about the time cutting could start in the upper two-thirds of the state of Illinois. It all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Here are the settlement prices from Chicago at the CME Group. July corn for the day at $3.68, finished 2.5 cents higher. September at $3.75 and a quarter, up 2.75. And December futures, $3.85 and 3/4, up 3 cents. March contract at $3.96 and 1/4, up 2.75. And May corn, $4.03 and 1/2, up 2.75 in Chicago. Soy complex, July beans, $0.25 higher, $9.54 and 1/2. The settlement price. August at $9.47 and 1/2, up 1 cent. September at $9.37 and 3/4, 3/4 higher. And November beans, your new crop harvest month, $9.35 and 1/2 cent higher for the day. January at $9.42 and 1/4, up a penny. Next year's March at $9.47 and 3/4, up 1. Bean meal at $3.08, and the lead option up $4.70. Bean meal, or rather bean oil, at $32.78, down 29 cents. A soft red winter wheat in the July harvest month, also the lead option at $5.21 and 3/4, up 10 and 3/4. And the hard red at $5.55, up 13 and 1/4 for the day. Live cattle futures finished the lead option June contract at $151.70, up 82 and 1/2 cents. August at $150.07 and 1/2 cents per 100 pounds, 72 and 1/2 cents. They finished lower on the day. I think I said that the June was up 82 and 1/2. They were down 82 and 1/2. Feeder cattle futures, May contract $218.97 and 1/2, up rather down 2 and 1/2 cents. And August at $216.57 and 1/2, $1.82 and 1/2 lower. Lean hogs on the day finished the June at $82.55. 80 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Here's a look at the outside markets at this hour. June crude oil at $59.61 a barrel, 8 cents lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel, $1.98 and 9 cents, down 1.5 cents for the day. Gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price at $2.04 and 2/10 of a cent, 1.4 cents lower. And natural gas in the lead option contract on its last trade at $3.15, down 0.1 cents. Ethanol futures in Chicago, a settlement price at $1.68 and 7 cents. Up 0.7 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 18,285, 56 points higher. The dollar at $1,224 or thereabouts, down around 75 cents. And the U.S. dollar at 94.27 is up 1.09 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly sunny, a high of 81 degrees today on a west wind at 10 to 14. That gust to 20 this afternoon. Mostly clear this tonight with a low of 46. Those winds will turn to the northwest at 11 to 14, gusting to 21, and then bring us just a 63-degree high tomorrow under sunny skies. That northwest wind will continue at 10 to 14, gusting to 20. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and a low of 44. Again, the northwest winds remain with us. 40% chance of showers after 1 in the afternoon on Wednesday. Mostly cloudy and a high of 58. Wednesday night, cloudy and 44. Thursday, sunny and 65 as the temps come back up. Mostly clear on Thursday evening, dropping to 47. Sunny on Friday and a lovely 72 degrees. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 18th day of May 2015. On this Monday afternoon, we're joined, as always, by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What was the most exciting thing about the trade for you today?
Probably the wheat market. Commodity funds continue to cover short positions. They were estimated to be, huge short all winter, early spring here, and they've been covering the shorts. We'll see what the open interest brings tomorrow morning. They were buyers of over 8,500 contracts going to midday, but, fundamentally we're seeing too wet weather in the southeast, and I got confirmation that this morning. I called Zwicker this morning to see if he was the one that started the barroom brawl down in Waco. He said no, he didn't stop there because there's too many bikers outside there. So, but he confirmed that Texas, the eastern half of Texas, is just like a giant swimming pool, and so we're going to see some quality concerns more than anything there. And the fear of that, though, is that quality concerns becomes an issue, then that wheat could become feed wheat real quick. But weather forecasts for the northwest, even the Canadian prairies, freezing temperatures. So, a lot of excitement there and a lot of short covering. So we'll see if that follows through or not. But wheat definitely was the leader, especially on the open restart earlier this morning here, Todd.
Oftentimes when we go through holidays, we will see a change in the marketplace. Are you looking forward to any expectations as we make our way through next Monday and the Memorial Day?
That's something you got to keep an eye on, especially three-day weekends. And, if we rally into the three-day weekend in here, if you're one that needs to be a seller or get some downside protection on, I'd seriously consider that, because oftentimes you see shift in trends. Not only then, but also first day of summer, 4th of July weekend, and Labor Day weekend. Those are key time windows you kind of keep an eye on to see if there's a change in interest. And sometimes that three-day weekend or change of season can stimulate some reverse psychology.
What are your expectations for this afternoon's crop progress report?
Well, we'll see if we get it. They had some technical problems throughout the day on getting their numbers out. Never did see the export inspections numbers, so we'll see if that's going to be affected on the crop progress. I think trade's fairly well dialed in to 85-90% complete as a nation on corn plantings, average is 76. So we're above the average, and we got to that level in a heartbeat. Bean planting progress 48-52%. The average is about 38% for this time of year. Wheat conditions are expected to improve 1-2%. So we'll see if that actually happens, or see if the commentary starts to show signals of a little bit of deterioration. But that'll probably give us some direction here for this evening's opening trade at 7 o'clock.
Looking forward over the long haul, are we in a sideways to lower marketplace in general for corn and soybeans? And I think wheat would be a pretty decent consideration for this process.
Well, that's a very good question. From the long haul, over the last few years, I think we're still a little sideways to the lower end through here. I believe that we're getting close to some 8 to 9 year lows, but we're just not quite there yet. So I kind of view the overall pricing scenario as sort of that last little down. If you turn back the clock to when we're making the highs, a lot of people said, boy, if corn ever gets to $3, I'm going to be a buyer. I'm going to store 2 to 3 years worth of corn. Beans get down around $8. I'm going to do the same thing there. Well, we're approaching those levels, so we'll see how brave we are here as we get into this fall.
What are your thoughts on the livestock for the day?
It's kind of a stalemate. A little pop-up demand here. We got the, as you mentioned, three-day weekend. We're going to have some Packers, you know, shuffle some schedules around. We'll see how the clearance goes here this weekend. Like, weather's supposed to be favorable. The thing on the meat sector is hogs were weekly kills are 5% above a year ago. We're not seeing the expansion, so that signals, you know, some hogs coming into the countryside here. Beef-wise, we're still working with tight numbers, and the key for the whole meat sector is to make sure we maintain our export share of the marketplace, Todd.
Have we heard anything new about poultry and avian flu for the week or the day?
I haven't really picked up anything on it. I mean, it's around. It's not going to go away. I you know, feel it's going to, you know, continue to maybe get a little worse as we move down the road. As we mentioned before, I think the key is a public perspective on it, and see how, you know, the public handles it. See if these flu viruses, you know, take another form or strain or not. Then lastly, too, you know, we've got to make sure our foreign buyers don't get totally spooked. I know they've backed away in a few areas, but, you know, the whole thing in through here, if we can not see it get too serious, we should be able to go through it. But if it starts to ramp up here down the road, it could ding feed demand a little bit.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today, Kurt.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. Too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. In just a moment, we'll take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Credit conditions in the 10th Federal Reserve District, that's out west, shows weakening as farm income declined further in the first quarter of 2015. Omaha branch executive with the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, Nathan Kaufman, says lower crop prices and high input costs have decreased profit margins and increased concerns about farmer ability to repay loans down the road.
But in the last several years, profits have been so good in agriculture that a lot of people have been making pretty good money. Now a lot of bankers and other lenders are looking at where the risks are, wanting to understand what level of working capital do their borrowers have. Is it sufficient to get them through these times? And so operating loans have picked up. You know, because of lower incomes, there has been a need for more financing of some of those short-term expenditures. And I think that we're seeing more lenders that are wanting, just being cautious, recognizing that things are still pretty good overall, and they have been very good, but being cautious about what that means for the next year or so.
Kaufman says cropland values edged down in the first quarter, while pasture land values held firm.
The land that's very, very high quality still does seem to be selling quite well. The land that is maybe not quite as good, we do see some variation there and some stories of no sales at auctions. We see some other weaknesses in that side of the land market. But overall, you know, there has been a bit of downward pressure because of the lower income.
Profit margins in the livestock industry have remained stable, but most bankers do not think farm income or credit conditions in the Western Corn Belt will improve in the next 3 months. The 10th Federal Reserve District covers Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Wyoming, Colorado, northern New Mexico, and western Missouri. The flagging incomes, of course, are part and parcel of the size of the corn crop last year, and USDA is projecting even a bigger crop this year, the largest one ever. But the U.S. Grains Council has noted that Argentina, Mexico, and Serbia are also increasing their production. The top four corn exporting countries are the United States, Argentina, Brazil, and Ukraine. These competitors are projected to produce 11% of world corn, yet they are expected to provide about 40% of world exports. The U.S. is projected to produce about 30% of world corn and provided 35% of world exports. Bottom line, according to the council chair, Ron Gray, the growing market for U.S. corn exports is global. Gray says U.S. competitors are positioned to meet global demand if the United States does not focus on its international customers. He says one way to do this is by creating barrier-free open trade with overseas buyers. The council sees the Trans-Pacific Partnership and Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership as critical to U.S. agriculture's future profitability. And finally today, there seems to be some conflicting messages about USDA's GMO-free label plan. USDA's AMS, that's the Agricultural Marketing Service, is developing a voluntary GMO-free label. The Coalition for Safe Affordable Food says this plan is similar to one in Pompeo's Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act. Overall, the coalition says USDA's expected move signals there is the capability, desire, and expertise needed to implement a voluntary non-GMO labeling standard across the country. The group says it is time for Congress to lead on the issue and pass a transparent bipartisan solution. Stonyfield Farm co-founder Gary Hirschberg says a voluntary certification program fails to give consumers what they want, however, which is full transparency about the presence of GMOs, not just their absence. Hirschberg says mandatory GMO labeling would allow consumers to vote with their dollars and have a say in the type of ag they want to see in the country. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Forward, farmers should think more about using multiple herbicides that will control resistant weeds than simply using a single control method. University of Illinois researchers pulled more than 500 site years' worth of data from a retail applicator to see how resistant weeds developed in farmers' fields. What they found is this, says U of I Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager. Slowing the development and spread of resistant weeds happened best when a farmer used several different effective herbicides to control the weed every time an application was made. Here's Hager.
What the results are suggesting is that using a residual herbicide can certainly be effective and can be helpful, but we really need to use multiple effective residual herbicides each application, and we also need to use multiple effective herbicides in tank mixtures when we make our post-herbicide applications.
Here's how farmers should consider applying this knowledge to their operations as it relates to the new soybean herbicide trait products entering the market.
Really what our results are suggesting to us is that by simply putting a residual down and then following up with one of these premixed combinations of glyphosate with either 2,4-D or dicamba, if we've already lost the effectiveness of glyphosate in that field, we're really not doing what our results suggest that we should be doing in using multiple effective herbicides every time that we make an application. So would there be possibly a third tank mix component that we can include in a two-way mix of, say, dicamba glyphosate or 2,4-D glyphosate if our glyphosate effectiveness has already been compromised in that field?
Likewise, says Hager, a farmer should consider how many different modes or mechanisms of action can be made when the soil residual herbicide is applied prior to planting. The black cutworm may do damage in central and northern Illinois cornfields over the Memorial Day weekend. Farmers should begin scouting soon because not all BT corn hybrids offer adequate protection. University of Illinois entomologists are estimating, based on black cutworm moth flights, that farmers might find the overnight work of the moth's larval stage offspring beginning in late May. The larvae can cut a corn plant off. Farmers should scout for early feeding damage this week and next, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
But growers are definitely encouraged to look for early signs of cutworm activity, which would be small pinhole areas on leaves that have been removed by those very small caterpillars, typically in the 1 to 3 instar stage. Once the caterpillars go into that fourth larval instar, they can begin to cut plants.
Based on some heat unit calculations, U of I entomologists project cutting dates will begin in Ford County May 24th, Mercer County May 25th, Lee County on the 31st of May, Whiteside June 1st, and Henry County, Illinois on the 3rd day of June. Plants in the 1 to 4 leaf stage are most susceptible to cutting. It's important to note that not all BT corn hybrids adequately protect against the black cutworm.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's Let's check on this Monday afternoon now. The cash grain market. Greg Johnson is on the phone line from the Andersons. Good afternoon to you, Greg. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd. I'm doing well.
Is it slow there in the office?
It's very slow today. Even with a little bit of a rally, the prices still aren't to a point where farmers want to let loose. So it's a nice day today because we were higher, but we need a few more days before we get busy, I would say.
Slow in the fact that they are not calling in, or simply slow because they're not making sales, or a combination thereof?
Both today. I mean, some days, you can get, but I think after the big week, I think people are just taking some downtime today. It's a Monday, and so maybe it's like that three-day weekend. But as far as making sales, we haven't seen that for quite some time now.
All right. Your expectations going into the rest of the week and into that Memorial Day weekend?
Well, if wheat can continue to rally, that might allow corn to work up a little bit, and there certainly is corn, old crop corn out there to be sold. Whether a 10-cent rally would generate movement, I'm not sure. We really don't have farmers putting offers in. They want to wait and see and hope to respond quick enough. So it's hard to say what price will trigger some farmer sales. It might be that 10 to 15 cents. I hope we get a chance to prove that theory.
Are there trigger fingers that quick?
I hope so, because the way this market is, it doesn't stay there very long. So I hope they're listening to the radio and hear that the markets are up and call in and get that grain sold.
If it goes up, I'm sure they will be calling you fairly quickly. How much grain do you really think is out there? Still a lot?
I think there's more west of the Mississippi River in Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska than what there is here in central Illinois. I think a lot of the grain in Illinois moved back in January, February, and March when, you know, elevators were offering free DP and, you know, the price was a little bit better. So I think here in Illinois we've already seen a big chunk of movement. It may not be priced necessarily. It may be in DP. But as far as actual bushels on the farm, I think a lot of those bushels have moved. And talking to some of our elevators out west, I don't get that same impression. They feel like the bins are still full out west.
I'm going to ask you to speculate just a little bit for me. So if you were to have to guess where the hottest basis levels will be, where might they be centered across the Corn Belt?
Ever since fall harvest has been over with, Decatur has been a very good basis. I guess I would anticipate basis staying strong here in central Illinois. We've started to see basis levels get better in Indiana and Iowa, but both of our ethanol plants in those states say that they think the corn's out there, and so they think basis levels could drop, assuming we get to the point where markets rally 10, 15 cents or farmers decide to sell. But I guess I don't think there's that much corn here in Illinois that you'll see the basis drop tremendously. I think we could see it drop a little bit, you know, a nickel or something, but not dramatically.
Your assessment of the local soybean conditions?
We got off to a good start on the 40% that got planted, and now this last half of the crop is it's going to be stop and start. But so far, so good. What's in the ground, I think the warm days that we've had and the rain, but not too excessive for the most part, has really helped out the corn and the beans both.
And your bids for the day?
Cash corn tonight is 362, new corn 365. Cash beans are 954, new beans are 915, and new wheat is 512.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Greg Johnson. He's with the Andersons from right here in Urbana-Champaign in Champaign County. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a look at the weather forecast.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Cheese Soufflé Day. It's also Rooster Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1808, Elijah Craig died, a Baptist minister in Kentucky. He was an important figure in the invention of bourbon whiskey. He ran a paper mill and started a distillery in 1789. Legend credits him with being the first to use new charred oak barrels to age corn whiskey, which is a key step in making bourbon. In 1824, Wilhelm Hofmeister was born, a German botanist. He discerned the regular alternation of sexual and asexual generations in plants, which is the basis for the explanation of the life cycle in all known plants. In 1875, Robert Horton was born, an American hydraulic engineer. He is considered the father of modern hydrology. His studies established a basis for the analysis of soil erosion that enabled strategies for soil conservation. In 1935, Alan Burns was born. He was the creator of the character Captain Horatio Magellan Crunch for Quaker Oats Captain Crunch breakfast cereal. And in 2001, Hong Kong ordered more than 1 million chickens and other poultry killed to halt the spread of a bird flu epidemic. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's check the weather forecast. Mark Russo joins us from Earthrisk Technologies out of Chicago. Mark, thanks for being with us. Looking forward to a really good week, although producers, I think, would like that good week to not include quite so much rainfall so they could get back in and maybe sow the end of the corn crop and certainly get a much better start, mid-start, I suppose, on the soybean crop. What can you tell me?
Well, we should have a pretty good week here coming up as we do not see any real excessive wet patterns or days here across the Corn Belt. There will be a minor system here coming through on Wednesday, and then that will be followed by another system the latter part of the upcoming holiday weekend. But in between those systems, we will have fair and dry days, and that should allow for the remainder of corn, and more importantly here with soybean planting in full gear, allow for a lot of seeds to be sown here. Coming up. And from a temperature standpoint, see a lot of variability here in the Midwest. And so we've had our warmer days, such as what we've seen in recent days, but it's going to be followed by some cooler weather coming up over the next couple of days, but then temperatures will rebound. So really no kind of steady temperature pattern here in the Midwest, but rather quite a bit of variability.
Does this change with this cool little set of temperatures here in the northwest winds, the pattern where we have had cooler temperatures, relatively speaking, or maybe more normal, and then just warmer than normal temperatures fairly periodically? And that's been pretty persistent since we came into early spring.
Right, and we feel that's by and large going to continue here, not only through month's end, but even into the start of June as this temperature pattern looks firmly locked in place. And even for that matter, the precip pattern. While we've seen the plains region or the plains region has turned excessively wet. The whole middle of the country has turned wetter, but the excessive rains has been really confined to the southern plains and some pockets of the northern plains now, which had been very dry here. But they're really staying out of the Midwest, and we see no sign of any really wet patterns or patterns of well above normal precip here in the Corn Belt through month's end, or even for that matter into the start of June.
Other parts of the world you've been watching, Ukraine, Eastern Europe, China, and some of the major northern growing regions of the world?
Well, certainly kind of the macro view around the world is it's not as ideal as it was, say, about a month ago. Some issues have popped up here and there, nothing major at the present time, but some dryness evolving with heat in areas of Ukraine and Russia following actually adequate rainfall and good cooler temperatures here of late. But we've seen extreme heat in portions of North Africa and Southern Europe, and then across China, northeastern China, the Manchuria region has seen cooler temperatures here prevail, and the area has turned wetter, which is improving soil moisture but also delaying planting.
And anything else that we ought to take up before I let you go for the afternoon, or does that cover it all for the most part?
Oh, no. The only one final note here is that our moderately strong El Nino in place continues to likely strengthen here as we go into the heart of summer. So something to keep an eye on here going forward.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with EarthRisk Technologies. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report and helps us wrap it up. You have a great afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.